So Hellions is unique in that I think it actually technically is the first of its kind. It's a PFP project that is also an open edition. There's no capped supply. There can be as many Hellions as people want there to be. But I think this idea of there being unlimited mints, right, at a really affordable price point makes more sense and is a more sustainable way of selling NFTs that are just art for art's sake than the way that we used to do it.
There's no manufactured scarcity at that point.
Yeah. I wanted to imagine like an NFT project or a PFP project that was more like an infinite gumball machine. It's like this is because people love it and they want to own it, make it available for everybody.
Welcome back to Zero Rights Reserved, the podcast about nouns, DAOs, Ethereum, NFTs, and more. I'm your host, Tody Hawk, and this week I'm joined by mustachioed headband punk, ex-CryptoPunks brand lead, CC0 artist, and maybe most importantly, dad, Noah Davis, aka CryptoPunk Noah, on the app formerly known as the Bird App. Welcome to Zero Pod, Noah.
Thank you so much, Tody. My pleasure to be here.
So glad to have you. So nouns are, you know, people, places, and things, right? So we often like to start with the people and really get a good sense of where they came from, what their journey was. So I'd love it if you could sort of tell us your story, a little bit about how you came to be an artist and also how you came into sort of crypto and NFTs. And I know a lot of this story actually, but I'd love to hear you tell it though.
100%. So first off, I think everybody really is an artist. You're an artist just as much as I am. It's just a question of intent, really, at the end of the day. And this is something that I think artists have proven over the years. It's been pretty apparent ever since Marcel Duchamp put a urinal on a pedestal and said, this is art. And people had to agree, well, yeah, I guess it's art.
I have a peaceful groupie with that trait.
Oh, really? Cool.
Trait. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that there's a urinal trait in as a reference to Duchamp in that collection. That's cool.
Yeah.
I really believe that everybody has that kind of authority. If they want to be an artist, you just make a declaration and you know, strap in.
We're going to talk aliens later. And I saw you made in one of the teasers that you sent out, you made a reference to Magritte as well. Cécine Pain Pupe. And that's another maybe good example of what you're talking about.
100%. Yep. Yeah. Making declarations, especially weird, absurd ones that are provocative like that. That is the contemporary artist's job, basically, is to make you feel uncomfortable and to probe those weird boundaries of definitions. Right. If we're talking about people, places, and things and nouns. But in any case, I digress. I came to crypto and NFTs in a very kind of circuitous, weird way. I was the contemporary art specialist at Christie's during the pandemic when NFTs started to become a thing, right? And in that capacity as the contemporary art online sales dude at Christie's New York, it was I who put an NFT into an auction, and it turned out to be the Beeple NFT that sold for $69 million. And I describe it that way because it really did kind of happen to me. I did not go out of my way to make this sale a giant thing, right? I thought it would be fun to sell something a little bit outlandish and weird and different. And
but see, they always think that the best strikers in soccer or football, depending on where you're at, are just doing tap-ins all day long too. So sometimes it's about being in the right place.
No, nine out of 10 parts of success are capitalizing on random fate, you know, basically. So, said yes to a consignment that turned out to be the Beeple NFT. And after it sold for a really absurd amount of money, decided to stick around and ride this wave and see where it takes me. Basically, when that sale happened, I did not own a laptop, did not own an iPad. I had a phone, I had a smartphone, but that was as tech savvy as I had gotten in life at that point. And that was kind of deliberate too. Like I was not on social media. I was very kind of skeeved out by social media. I grew up in high school around Facebook and all this shit. And it really, really made me uncomfortable. And so got out of that ecosystem when I arrived at college and then stuck with art as a business. Worked in art galleries. And the reason I decided to commit to being in the NFT space was just because of the ethos, really. At the end of the day, the philosophy of the people in this space was so much more intriguing and interesting and relevant for me and resonates with me on a deeper human level than the contemporary art world, which, you know, there are a lot of things to like about the contemporary art market, and there are things to glean about human nature there. And it was an amazing experience, but those 10 years that I was ready by the end of it to try something new. So
I've heard you make some critiques of the art, the traditional art scene in other interviews. And I'm wondering if you could do a bit of compare and contrast between your experience with the traditional art scene versus NFTs and in some ways you think they're maybe different or better or worse.
Sure. Yeah. So David Hammons is an amazing contemporary artist who I think about a lot. And he makes work largely about the absurdity of the Black experience in America. He's a Black artist, but makes a lot of very thought-provoking work that kind of borders on found object or like not art, right? I helped to sell a mason jar full of twigs by David Hammons for more than $100,000. But he has this quote, where I'm paraphrasing, but he said, "The art audience is the worst audience in the world because it's overeducated. It is conservative. It's put to criticism and it never has any fun." Right. And I tweeted that quote once back when I was still working at Christie's, and they made me take it down, which is pretty funny.
But we don't do that around here, Noah.
Yeah. So anyway, but I think there's something to that. You know, it, David Hammons is literally maybe the greatest living artist. And that if that's his true take on the art world, you've got to investigate that. And there's something to it. You know, I know this crowd, and there are some great people in the art world. There are some terrible people in the NFT world. But
right.
The art world has just been around for so much longer, and there are these entrenched systems and ways of doing business that I don't think actually benefit the artist. And so long as the artist is not being served, right, if they're not the ones who are inspired and they keep going, then this whole ecosystem collapses. So
maybe you could make the argument that a lot of those structures were set up by and for collectors more so than by and for artists in the traditional.
Maybe for collectors, but I think it's more nuanced than that. I think it's also a lot for the middlemen, you know?
Right.
These systems benefit the collector, of course, but they also benefit the people who are in the middle of these deals.
Right.
And that was another thing that was really exciting and sexy to me about blockchain and blockchain-assisted business, because it's so much more efficient. It's obscene how efficient it is. I think it's probably the most efficient market on the planet. It's also one of the most, if not the most, most immature markets on the planet. And that extends to like emotional immaturity. So if you have this ecosystem that is super, super, super efficient and people are acting on their most basic instinct emotions, then you wind up with chaos. But chaos is like also a great filter, really. So only the strong survive. Maybe it's like evolution on a much more focused level. Also, there's this added component in our space of the artist needing to be like savvy with social media and understand their role as a kind of performer, which is not necessarily the same sort of responsibility that artists have had up until this point. But that's, you know, that's social media. That's the current age we live in. I don't think that's necessarily got much to do with like blockchain or crypto or NFTs. It's just that the most successful artists of the contemporary moment are performing their role in this new way.
Right. Yeah, and to your point, I think blockchain can be a double-edged sword for artists, but it does really give a lot of opportunities to people that otherwise wouldn't have them. I'm thinking of an artist from Korea named G, J-H-E-E, who started entering some contests in within Nouns that we were putting on, some art contests, and got some nice exposure from that, and ended up over the course of 6 months getting her own art show in Korea from the NFTs that she started minting. And so it was just kind of a really neat story to see how like blockchain could enable someone to get an audience, you know, for her art and for her talent when otherwise maybe she wouldn't have.
Yeah, I've never heard of G, so I gotta check her out.
But I'll send you some of her stuff.
Fiwo, you know, Fiwo was one of the first artists that I worked with at Christie's after the Beeple sale.
Nice.
And I wanted to work with Fiwo specifically because of that kind of narrative. You know, it's very compelling. The idea that he grew up in this household that did not accept him for who he was, and who you want to be is tantamount to who you are in our society. And so the fact that he was discouraged and violently from being himself, but found an outlet through this new medium, that was super, super, super compelling to me.
I've got a toad on my hat here. A fellow appreciator of the toads. Wanted to talk about that project a little bit. I know you're also a lover of the toads. What did you think when you first saw the toads when they first came out? Did you mint them early on or did you buy them later?
Yeah, so my story with toads is really sweet. I love that project. It's right up there for me with CryptoPunks. I actually believe that CryptoHoods are the greatest CryptoPunks derivative out of a sea of thousands of derivative projects.
Maybe the bar.
No, I don't know. The bar, I think the bar for me is reverence for the CryptoPunks collection and also originality. A lot of CryptoPunks derivatives are very obviously derivatives of CryptoPunks.
The derivative in the true sense rather than being extensions.
The most annoying and obviously low effort is the funks where they just flip them in a different direction. It's that kind of shit is just so uninspired to me.
There's one with toads too called Same Toads. You probably saw them where they literally just said,
it was on a different blockchain.
We'll just release them again. No, it's literally on Ethereum. Same toads.
Oh, really? Because I feel like somebody minted toads again on Solana. And
probably.
Had a little bit of a life.
That was Solana toads. But there's like same toads, which are literally just on Ethereum, same art, same everything. It's like just because you can just doesn't mean you should. It's my take
right.
on that.
It's like the Ordinals CryptoPunks, Bitcoin punks or whatever. Anyway, the toads, I watched them take shape, really. I was hanging out in the CryptoPunks Discord when people started to change their PFPs to their honorary toads. And I had no idea what these things were. You know, I was fascinated by them because, first of all, they look cool. They're cute. They're adorable. They're amazing. Gremlin is a fantastic
artist. I mean, just look at it. I mean, come on.
Iconic. Yeah.
It's not to like.
But, you know, people who I respected and looked up to in this space, nominally like new friends, right? My new friends were wearing this cool avatar and I was almost sheepish. I was like afraid to ask what it was, you know? Then I saw it so many times at a certain point, I was like, I gotta know, what is
you,
this?
You were like the Parks and Recreation meme. At this point, I'm too afraid to ask.
Yeah, sure. Yes, exactly. And so, but eventually I did and got closer to the people who were working on this project and they became friends and I got to see it get made, basically, you know? I tried, and this is all on chain, but I tried to mint and got outgassed that night. It was the first mint that I tried to participate in and I missed out because I didn't have enough ETH in my wallet. I'd never done this before and I had no
many such cases.
Many such cases, right. But so I bought my toad at cost from a friend on the team, and it was such a special thing because.
Wait, was it Modi? Because I'm pretty sure Modi told the other side of this story recently on Spaces.
No, it wasn't Modi. Okay. It was somebody else on the team. Modi, you know, I'm close with the dude. And Gremplin, actually, and Aaron, who was, I have no idea what Aaron's up to nowadays, but Gremplin and Aaron gifted my mom a Cryptode, and that was her first NFT.
Amazing.
So
does she still have it?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, my mom, that NFT is effectively burned because that my mom does not know how to use MetaMask really. Or like, I just, it's so funny. I found this picture too. Somebody was exhibiting her toad in an art show in San Francisco. So there's this picture of somebody staring deeply and thoughtfully into my mom's Cryptode at Mark Gallery.
You should get her an ENS that's like 0x mom, and then people can just send
I'm
stuff
sure to the burn. I could squat on it. I could wait for somebody to let it expire. No, I think my mom did have an ENS briefly. I know my wife did. My wife had a cool ENS actually, but then she let it expire. So it is what it is.
I tried to onboard my wife to NFTs early on and like to some project that's no longer around. And every once in a while, she'll be like, so how's my fox doing? And I'm just,
Don't ask. My wife, we together minted the Littles NFT and she flipped hers for a small profit. So
that's a good way to onboard.
Yeah, not bad. I mean, anyway, good times. NFTs, man.
You went on to release a collection of your own, a really cool collection called Howlers. I'd love to hear, you know, how that came to be and, you know, what the inspirations behind that project were also.
Sure. Yeah. Really, Howlers is kind of almost my derivative cryptos collection in a weird way. You know, I was so inspired by what that team did. And also for me, it was a bit of like a love letter to Web3 and a leap of faith and proving to myself really that all this talk that I had been talking about Web3 was true. Because, you know, I've always made drawings. I've always made art. I told you at the beginning of this conversation, I believe everyone's an artist.
Yeah.
But I wanted to be an artist. You know, if I'm being honest about my trajectory in life, that's probably what I would have wanted to do for a living, right? My father was a songwriter, always looked up to him and admired his creativity. The reason I didn't commit to it and rather decided to work in the art business was because I felt like the way the art world was set up, I would have to make so many compromises in order to make a living from art, right?
That's what we're told, right? At the end of the day, when we're young, we're told, you know, it's fine. Like sports is a hobby and like guitar is a hobby and art is a hobby, but you know, don't hang your hat on it because you'll just end up being, you know, a poor person. And you,
well, yeah, that's part of it. I wasn't, honestly, that's not the thing that spooked me. The idea was if I want to make a living from this, if I want to be a successful artist and make money from it, then I'm going to have to make something that I don't necessarily want to make. And then my inspiration will no longer be pure, right? I'll make something that I can sell, you know? With Howlers, there's not a single piece, part, molecule of that collection that I didn't want to draw and that I didn't love drawing. You know,
that's awesome.
It's inspired by my favorite things in the world. I'm a collector of tattoos, and so I love American traditional tattooing. I love French and Russian criminal tattooing. There's a lot of references to those styles in the Howlers collection. Obviously, there's some traits that refer to CryptoPunks and to other NFTs from the space that I look up to. Also 1930s animation, that style too informs it, like old Disney.
I can see that influence a lot.
And actually the main silhouette, the Howlers silhouette, which I have tattooed on my wrist now too, that silhouette was inspired by Nouns. I was looking at Nouns and I love the way that Nouns flattens the space and the face, everything is facing forward, right? So Howlers is that the wolves are in profile, but the eyes are symmetrical. Everything's kind of balanced in this way that is actually ridiculous. You know, if you saw a wolf walking around in real life, it would be like, you know, flat.
People often have that problem when they're trying to make 3D versions of Nouns too. It's like this, sometimes they make it with the glasses sticking out like this, like they're just floating, you know?
Yeah, no, it's exactly that. So yeah, I had Nouns Also because I love Gremlin and I think these eyes are so iconic. But I had Nouns up on my laptop because I finally got around to getting myself a laptop.
Oh, good. I made it.
Yeah. And I had graph paper in front of me and I drew the silhouette for Howlers. But literally, dude, I'm not even kidding. I bought the laptop and the iPad in order to make Howlers. That is why I bought it.
Believe in yourself, right?
Yeah. Invest so it was kind of a like, I'm going to do this, even though I'm terrified to do it, because I want to do it. You know, I really want to do it. And yeah, it worked out. So
very cool. Tell us a little bit about the launch of Howlers. Obviously, it was a bit of a learning experience. You're probably sick of talking about it, but.
No. I've spoken on this before I've said it before. I'll say it again. I'm really sad that the launch went the way that it did. Embarrassed that it didn't work. You know, I was trying to emulate Toads again, right? By doing this stealth launch that didn't actually turn out to be a stealth launch. I had 400 followers on the Howlers Twitter when I first tweeted out, you know, that I in fact was behind the project. The Christie's NFT guy was the dude making the project.
Yeah.
And within a week, we went from 400 followers to more than 33,000 followers. So I was totally in over my head, you know? And what I believed at the time, that I was doing this in like a more crypto native way that was, in response to the whitelist meta of the time. I don't remember. I mean, I don't know. Of course you remember, but your listeners might not remember that during that era, early 2022, there was this crazy, awful, stressful meta going around where had to grind to get a whitelist.
The grinder.
Yeah. The grind in these discords and perform your allegiance to these brands that didn't even exist yet just to get a shot at minting it. And I felt like that was just so debasing and not crypto. You know, as far as I understood it, crypto is about like being ready for the opportunity and pouncing and striking, like, and that opportunity being basically available to everyone, and it's PvP, right?
Right.
So yes, it is. I launched the project the way that I promised I would. But I think that nowadays we know that there's pitfalls to that, you know, that I didn't anticipate. So it was a bummer to see people miss out on the mint who really wanted to have it, you know, and who were there from the days when I had 400 followers.
Yeah.
The market's going to do what it does. And obviously, they were trading for a lot more than mint very quickly. But if I could do it over again, would I do it the same way? Absolutely not. No, I wish that I had made the contract live before I even, connected myself to the project, but
you could have just done like one a day forever, you know,
or like that. Yeah. Howlers wasn't meant to be that kind of project. I think that's such a specific way to approach the NFT space. But you know, there are ways to do this that are better. So I'll say that.
Yeah. No, but I think, like you said, it is a learning experience, right? And maybe we're all artists, but we're still kind of all figuring it out as we go as well, right?
Yeah. No, it is nothing if not a work in progress, the NFT space. So
I'd love to hear what you've learned from Howlers over the past, I guess, almost 2 years now, in terms of like what it's like to build a community around your art.
So much easier said than done. Let's get that off the bat, out there for anybody who's thinking about launching their own project. If community is an important part of it, that's not something that you can just wave a magic wand and have it.
Right.
The way I approached it, at least, and it's also not a one size fits all kind of thing, but I gave a lot of, decision-making power over to the community. If you want to call it that. I also, this the word community kind of rubs me the wrong way now, because I do feel like it's been a bit bastardized and like stripped of all of its meaning.
What do you prefer?
I don't know. That's a great question. I've never thought about it. I've never thought about what makes more sense. But community is one of those things like utility that now no longer
has
much meaning for me. It's like an empty vessel.
It's like semantic satiation. You say it too many times, it doesn't have any meaning anymore.
Exactly. Yeah. So anyway, but what I did was to give up a lot of that authorship, whatever,
right,
to people who bought the project, especially in those early days, you know. But I was in the Discord, which I didn't make, by the way. The Discord was a community thing. And then I one day decided, okay, this is the Discord now. That was right. The way I approached most of things with the project was like, you guys are running the show. I'm just helping things move in the right direction, helping to steer it in the right direction. But so we had no roadmap, right? There were no promises. It was really important to me that Howlers was just art. It was CC0. And that first week being in the Discord with the community, the people who were really excited to be a part of this project, we wrote the roadmap together. The road kind of was the map, you know?
Right.
Within 15 minutes of hanging out that first day, we'd already drawn the outlines, the basic outlines for the rest of the project and for the next two collections that we...
And what was the roadmap for anyone who was not familiar with what you guys have done?
Initially, the project was no roadmap, CC0, no promises. We're launching it. It's just 5,000 wolves, you know, that are cool.
No wolf map.
No wolf map. Yeah. And that was also inspired by Toads, right? But eventually, with the help of the community, we decided there was going to be a follow-up collection called Prey. And the Prey would be 5,000 corresponding, right? 5K wolves, 5K prey, but prey animals, different types. So there was a beaver, there was a rabbit, there was an elk. Each one of those different types of animals also had a rarer subset. Like there was a bone elk, and there was a fire sheep.
So that reminds me a little bit. We had Psych on last week on the pod. From Deadfellas, and he talked a little bit about what they did with rarity with Deadfellas, which was interesting, is how they had tiers, which I think was pretty cool and pretty novel for the time. So you'd have like a zombie type, but it would, you know, it would either be like fresh or like semi-rotten or rotten. So you guys kind of had a similar mechanism with like the burning sheep.
It was tiered basically. And I should also say that Deadfellas are super meaningful to me as well. And for a while I was a dead fella, and Psych, as well as Gremlin, they both contributed one of ones to Howlers. So that was another integral part of the success of that program. And part of the framing device, right? This was like not just me alone doing it. It's like inviting my friends to be part of the project too.
Yeah.
So that is worth mentioning. But in any case, the prey animals were airdropped to holders. So if you had 10 Howlers, you were going to get 10 prey. And they would be airdropped into your wallet. After that, the third collection was going to be called Champions. And to get a champion, you had to feed your prey to your wolf, to your Howler. And by feeding them, you'd burn them both, but you'd get a new NFT, which then you could stake into a blockchain-based March Madness-style tournament. Okay. So,
crazy.
Yeah, it was very, very ambitious, like super ambitious. And so...
Very, very 2022 also in some ways.
It was like, I definitely bit off a lot more than I could chew. Because I was still, you got to keep in mind also, I was still working at Christie's, you know, I had this full-time job selling NFTs at the auction house. But Howlers was just like my passion project, was my baby. And I wanted to see it. I wanted to be as ambitious as I could be, basically. And so we did all those things, you know, within a year. And I never really expanded the team. It was always just, I was working on Prey with Manifold. So we did the airdrop together. And then for the tournament, I worked with a studio called Lair, and I'm working with Lair again now on the newest chapter of Howlers called Hellions. But we can talk about that in a moment. But for the tournament, you know, you would stake your champion in the contract, and then each round, you would see who you were fighting against, what your odds were of winning. And then progressively, as the rounds go on and on and on, it gets to be a much tighter race. So you could see like all more than 1,000 people, or 1,000, at least 1,000 wolves, 1,000 champions were staked for the contest, which is a pretty crazy metric considering we did this year.
Yeah.
But so at the end of it all, there were 5 or 6 winners, and I gifted them or awarded them, I guess, different NFTs from my collection. So one of the prizes was a dead fella. Nice. The top prize was a Clone X, Demon nice. Clone X. So that felt really good too, also to give people NFTs that I bought and collected because I loved, right? Like from my personal collection, if you will.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, Gramplin, it was an amazing experience.
Gramplin must have loved all the burning on that roadmap. He loves to burn things. So.
Yes. Burning is a very, I find it really like cathartic and amazing in a way, because not only does it help in like a cynical supply and demand way by addressing your supply, it's also, I don't know, it's like a palate cleanser, right? You have a blank slate. Move on.
It's also crypto native too, which is interesting. I like to see things in crypto art that are easier to do or different enough to do with NFTs that you can't really do. I mean, you could burn traditional art, but it's not quite the same.
It's such those kids, I admire their creativity going out there and shooting their shot. But the kids who burnt the Banksy and turned it into an NFT, it doesn't have the same kind of potency as like Rob Ness sending the CryptoPunk to the burn address.
So we had Jack Butcher on our show a little bit ago, 3 weeks ago, and he was talking about almost that exact thing. He was talking about how New York Times was minting these old newspaper articles from 1975 on the blockchain. He was like, it's fucking insane. It's like, it doesn't make any sense. It's not 1975. You know, it's not the medium that it was made on. And it just, it's like a cash grab. So
I swear to God, man, if I had one Ethereum for every time a old school art collector took a call with me and proposed tokenizing their Picasso or their Rothko or their X, Y, and Z, yeah, I could retire. It was everybody wanted to do that. After the People sale, was like every other art collector thought that they were the smartest guy in the room because they had this brilliant idea to turn it into an NFT. I have X. Therefore, I can mint an NFT and sell the NFT without selling X
right.
and profit and enjoy right. it. It's like, it doesn't work. It's not, there's no alchemy here. People really, they wanted to make like, it was very simple. It was like, I have a Picasso, or imagine this is a Picasso. I'm going to make an NFT of this, sell the NFT, but keep this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That will be a brilliant thing to do. It's like, at the end of the day, where does the shiny object come from?
Yeah, for sure. All right. Back to Howlers for a minute. So you touched on this a little bit about how you decided to make the collection CC0. Obviously, this podcast is called Zero Rights Reserved. We love CC0 around these parts. It's not the right licensing for every single project, obviously, but we love it. And our podcast is CC0. We allow people or encourage people to remix it, reuse it. And so I'd love to ask you a little bit about that. Why did you decide to make Howlers and all the collections that have come after Howlers CC0 license?
It's not only Howlers and Hellions, by the way. My punk, my crypto punk is CC0. I technically Amazing. Have the right to
That's right,
declare
yeah.
this, but yeah, my punk is CC0 as well. I guess the thing that jumps to mind is when I was growing up, I was a big fan of DIY and DIY subcultures, especially as they correspond to music. So DIY okay. music subcultures, punk rock and early hip hop, rap and hip hop that have a special place in my heart. And I remember I had this hilarious conversation with my mom of all people, but Limp Bizkit's In Together Now was on the radio.
Yeah.
And if you know In Together Now, it's produced by DJ Premier. It has an old school hip hop beat behind it. And right. I loved that song so much. I was like 11 or 12 years old. And I thought it was the coolest fucking song. but I couldn't understand how it was made because, you know, I mentioned my dad's a musician and I know a little bit about like music production, and I just didn't understand, like, no one's actually playing that harp. The harp is like not being played by someone. What is that? And she explained to me sampling, like, this is how sampling works. And from that moment on, I was obsessed with sampling. And some of my favorite music of all time is basically musical collage. You know, it's put together from all these other components, and so much great music would never have been made if the artists didn't have that kind of access, first of all, and the tools to do it.
Certainly hip hop wouldn't exist in the form that it does today. That's for sure.
Yeah, no way. Zero chance. I mean, that golden era of hip hop, it's built on sampling. Early Kanye beats, you know, Kanye wouldn't exist if it weren't thanks to sampling.
Yeah.
But I thought sampling was the coolest fucking thing. And I hated hearing these stories of artists being prevented from enjoying the success of their work because it turns out they had sampled something and they didn't clear it correctly. Or
yeah,
I remember, you remember that dumb song that blew up when people were doing the viral videos? Fuck, what was it called? The Harlem Shake. The Harlem
Shake. Okay. Yeah.
The artist who made the Harlem Shake, there's a tiny sample at the beginning of the song, the Con los Terroristas or whatever.
Right, yeah.
But they got sued by the artist who was sampled, and
of course they did.
It became a nightmare for them. So, but yeah, that kind of stuff always struck me as a shame, basically, that the artist didn't have the radical freedom to just remix and create new works of art.
Did you see that story recently with that Chad who, like, AI created every melody possible and then
people couldn't see all the different
trademarks?
The copyrights, yeah. That's hilarious. That's really
funny. That's copyrights, what I meant to say. Yeah, you got copyrights for all the melodies known to man, basically.
Yeah. So that's the kind of thing, like, when you get down to the nitty gritty of it, copyright law is kind of absurd. It's ridiculous. Because why should you own an idea? Ideas should be free to everybody. You know, I understand why you would patent like a bunch of ingredients that you put together to make a medicine. Like,
or a physical object or something. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Unique physical things like symbols, visual symbols. In certain respects, yeah, I can see how it's important to protect your copyright. But like going after, I don't know, a student play because they used the Disney's Mickey Mouse, whatever. It just, I don't know. I don't see the utility there.
Not only that, but like the process forces these companies to do it as well. Like they have to go after the kids' play,
right?
In order to enforce,
Disney
doesn't want to. Yeah, Disney doesn't want to. It's not a good look.
Yeah, good point.
So it forces.
And then like now, I'm thinking now with ACK Alpha Centauri Kid is currently in a bit of a spat with Condé Nast because they took down his work Vogue from OpenSea. The work does not even contain a obvious reference to Vogue beyond the title. It's just titled Vogue. And they were still able to get it ripped off of OpenSea.
It's like you can't own a word.
Well, I mean,
apparently you can. I guess
technically you can.
Yeah.
Which I don't see how that's fair.
So I didn't mean to break up your train of thought because I could see where you're going. You're talking a little bit about your experience with samples and music, and I think you're about to tie it into your vision for your visual art. Yeah.
I just think the culture should belong to everybody. That's how you wind up with the richest possible culture, you know, from people having the freedom to remix and recontextualize ideas, things like that. There's this quote that's attributed to Picasso and nobody really knows if he actually said it, I think, which would be hilarious if he did steal it from somebody, but he said, good artists copy, great artists steal. And I think that's totally true, you know?
Is that like the quote that's like, don't believe everything you saw on the internet attributed to Einstein? Is it like that situation?
Sure, maybe.
No, I love that. It makes a lot of sense. You do have to, in a way, if you don't take influence from the past, you're not really making any kind of commentary also.
Yeah.
You're kind of just making art in a void at that point.
Wearing your influences on your sleeve, you know? And I definitely feel like I do that. Like I've got
nice.
I've got art all over my body, and that's the kind of art that I make too. So if like let's say this is such an iconic symbol, right? If the person who made that panther head had trademarked it and it was impossible for any other artists to tattoo it on people, there's so much cool design that has sprung from that dumb panther head. I just don't think anybody should be able to gatekeep that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's exciting how, obviously we've got a long way to go, but maybe blockchain has some solutions to help the people that do come up with great ideas, you know, retain some of the value for those ideas via provenance or via the blockchain. Do you have any thoughts on that side of things?
Well, you know, I have no idea how this technology is ultimately going to be used. And I don't want to be the one to propose ways for it to be used. I don't think I'm smart enough to do that. Also, if I had been predicting what we'd use this technology for back in the day, I would have been totally wrong, right? When I first encountered blockchain, it was 2018, Christie's was working with a collection, the Ebsworth collection. Barney Ebsworth had this amazing collection of American art. And we partnered with a company called Artory, A-R-T-O-R-Y, who were tokenizing cataloging for artworks and storing it on chain. So if you bought like the Willem de Kooning painting from their collection, you would also get this NFT that contained all of the provenance information, the literature references, the exhibition history. You could even record things like restoration, if the work was restored, what kind of work was done. These are things that really give value to the artwork.
Yeah.
And what the specialists at the auction house and their catalogers are doing all day long. They're just researching art and they're finding this true information and verifying it.
Right.
If that was all contained on a blockchain, it would be a hugely valuable thing. Like, I thought that was going to be the use case for NFTs, would be to keep track of information. That didn't wind up being the case. People started attaching JPEGs to them and they made the digital image have a currency. Right. So I have no idea what it will be used for. Could it be used for things like this, like copyright and trademarks and keeping track of it in a trustless, permissionless way? Yeah, it could. But yeah. I don't know what it will be used for. I don't think anybody does.
Yeah. The distributed ledger part, I mean, obviously has applications across many different fields, including art. But I think it is interesting that we, you know, went to the shiny JPEGs route first. I mean, we're human after all. We like pictures. We like shiny things.
Human, all too human. Yeah. I mean, well, it speaks to the power of visual art, you know? And I think it's only a matter of time before somebody finds a way to incorporate music in all this. Like, the music NFTs joke is very true now. No one's cracked that code, but do I think that it will play a valuable role in the music industry? It could absolutely do that. You know, there are problems that need to be solved in every creative industry. And I tend to believe that there's a way to bring blockchain to bear on that and make it more equitable for artists.
Just one more music NFT bear and then it's up only, I think.
Yes, exactly.
I think it was Raoul Paul that I heard on the Bankless pod, and he was talking about how everybody during DeFi summer, when DeFi summer started, like, yes, finally, like, we're going to take over TradFi. This is crypto's moment. And then like, DeFi summer fizzled pretty quickly and turned into like NFT year in 2021. And he just talked about how it's just like, it's such a commentary on humans. Like, we don't want sexier ways of trading money. We want sexier ways of speculating on things.
It's brutal. It's brutally efficient, but it's also extremely emotionally immature. That's what it is. And human beings maybe are just forever immature. Maybe that's the takeaway here, is that we're always going to be easily distracted and move on to the next thing. And that's why promising someone the future is going to be this way in 6 months to a year from now, I don't think anybody knows. I don't think anybody knows what it's going to look like, you know, even like a couple weeks from now. Can't really speculate on that. But that's also what makes it fun.
Well, I know that one thing, I know for sure one thing we can predict that's coming up a couple weeks from now, and that's Hellions. You see what I did there? It's pretty good. Let's talk Hellions for a minute. You've been teasing you've been teasing a project over the last week or so that's coming up, and it's coming up on Halloween. Ooh, and we're actually filming this on Friday the 13th. Ooh. So tell us about Hellions. What's it all about?
So Hellions is unique in that I think it actually technically is the first of its kind. I don't know this for sure, and I don't think that there's any kind of like value added for anything being first of its kind. But in any case, it's a PFP project that is also an open edition. There's no capped supply.
Okay.
There can be as many, I was about to say howlers, but there can be as many Hellions as people want there to be.
Right.
This was also informed by things that I learned from the Howlers Mint too, right? Like better ways of going about doing things. But I think this idea of there being unlimited mints, right, at a really affordable price point makes more sense and is a more sustainable way of selling NFTs that are just art for art's sake than the way that we used to do it. You know,
there's no manufactured scarcity at that point.
Yeah, no, this is because people love it and they want to own it, make it available for everybody. And don't turn the faucet off, you know, don't shut it off. Like this, I wanted to imagine like an NFT project or a PFP project that was more like an infinite gumball machine almost, or you could just keep
right.
Getting quarters in. But so Hellions are mintable. You can mint them for 0.013 ETH and up. It's pay what you want. On a sliding scale, you can pay as much as 0.666. I don't think anybody should or will. I can't encourage you to do that, but paying more will get you a more exquisite trait set. There's rarity in the collection and in the form of masks that your characters wear, and also types. There's the normal standard devil, there's the trippy skins, there's shadow devils, there's devils wearing hoodies and outerwear and stuff. I should have also clarified up front, but I'm terrible at pitching this collection.
we'll fix it in post. No, it's good.
Right, okay, cool, great. The Hellions are little devils, and I was actually going to call the project Little Devils initially, but then I felt like that was just too straightforward, and similarly with Howlers, I was not going to call Howlers. I was going to call it Rare Wolves, like werewolves. But
That's pretty good, actually.
It's all right.
I like Howlers, though.
Howlers is better. Howlers is absolutely better. But I went so far as to get the ENS for Rare Wolves. But then within a couple weeks of settling on that name, another project came Werewolves. Named Werewolves came out. Named
they made
werewolves.
Your decision for you, right?
Yeah, right. So I'm like, oh, shit, well, I can't do that anymore. I think that also speaks to how it wasn't the greatest idea if someone else was going to come up with it at the same time.
Yeah.
But anyway, I was going to call the project Little Devils because they're little adorable devils, but they're Hellions. And the impetus for making this was, one, spooky season is my favorite season. It is the greatest time of year as far as I'm concerned. I'm in New York City and...
Agreed.
It starts to get comfy and livable here in the fall. Otherwise, yep. It's kind of a tough environment.
It's nice here too. I'm in Canada, and I really like the fall.
Fall's the greatest. Yeah. It's inarguable, in my opinion. But so it's a celebration of the spooky season. It's about accessibility and inclusivity. You know, if you want to mint 400 of them, you can. And at a really competitive, easygoing price point.
But you can't mint 4,000 of them and block everybody else out.
No, exactly. Right. There's no, you can't corner the market because there's an infinite amount of this stuff. It's like, if you want to own it, if you like the art, you can. And if you don't want it, then fine. Like that's okay. And
some of the same themes that the Jack has been exploring in his work as well through checks and open pen. And most recently, Infinity Checks. I don't know if you heard what he did with that, where basically
Jack's one of those people that like, I'm not on that kind of level. I just like the fun JPEGs.
Nobody is. but it's just interesting that he's always thinking about these things. And he had a project called Infinity Checks where you could make different versions of the checks ad infinitum, but you didn't even really own them. Like you owned them, but they were soulbound. You couldn't trade them. So it's kind of an interesting idea.
Yeah, through dynamics like that, making a kind of commentary or playing around with this idea that these things are for sale or making them not for sale.
Yeah.
I think all of that's really interesting and valid. You know, this space its foundations are being eroded really quickly. It's being tested by this bear market, right?
Yep.
And I think it's becoming really apparent how unstable a scene that is only built on naked, anxious financial speculation really is. So trying to emphasize, like, this is also a place for art and for people to gather with like-minded individuals and celebrate this stuff. Like, that's really important. My dog is whining at the door. My wife and my son might be back from their walk.
it's all good. So when does Hellions drop? It drops on Halloween Day?
Halloween. Yeah. Oh, and there's also a game. So I'm working with the same game developer that worked on the Crypto Dick Butts S4 Mint. Okay. So there's going to be a fun, I think it's built in Unity, but we're making a game where you're going to play trick or treat. You're going to go trick or treating and you'll be able to use your loot from your trick or treating to buy a mask. Okay. And if you elect to do it that way, then you're guaranteed to get a mask. It's not clear which one you'll get. There are 50 different masks in the collection.
Right.
But if you'd rather not play the game, you can also just go straight to minting. But that will all go live on Halloween.
Very fun. I'll definitely have to get in the queue, grab myself a Hellion. They look really cool.
Thank you, first of all. But yeah, I hope people do. You know, I have no idea how this is going to play out. Nobody knows what the future holds. But I like
that the style is a little bit different too from Howlers. It's not exactly the same aesthetic. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, sure. Again, it was inspired by Nouns. What's interesting about Nouns is that they don't have outlines.
Right.
And
important thing that a lot of people don't realize when they start trying to do Nounish art, and they often like try to put the punk's outline, and it's like, no, that doesn't work.
Oh, yeah, it's all just solid blocks of color and arranged on the. So I took that and ran with it.
Nice.
With Howlers, the outline is super important to the work. It's like, and that comes from American traditional tattooing. Like all American traditional tattoos have this really hard outline.
Also, kind of evokes that 1930s cartoon feel that you were talking about as well.
Yeah. So the line is the important thing in Hellions, the collection is much more about color. So that was the focus there.
Very cool. Was there any other influences that you know that you drew on? Sometimes we don't know.
There's again tattooing and 1930s cartooning for sure. But anything else is subconscious.
Yeah. We don't know sometimes. We don't know what we're sampling sometimes.
A lot of it was drawn from like the idea that I was very soon going to be a father. You know, I just had my son on September 15th.
Congratulations.
And so I started working on this in September, you know, in the last couple weeks of waiting for my son to be born. And so that, you know, the innocence, childhood, mischievousness, like all that stuff was playing in my head.
You had your own little devil. Is that what you're saying?
I think I gotta go. It seems like my family's at the door, so I'm gonna have to bounce.
All right.
Now.
No, sounds good. I appreciate that. I love this conversation. It was really great. All right, thanks so much. It was great chatting with you, Noah. And enjoy your time with your little one. I've got a little one at home too now, so I know what it's like, and enjoy these moments. They're really special.
Thank you, boss.
Cheers.
All right. See you, sir. Bye-bye.